I'm Victoria from Biblio Lifestyle, and you're listening to the Reader's Couch podcast, the show that will help you bridge the gap between living a full and busy life to one where you're reading, learning new things, and having fun. In today's episode, I'm so excited to chat with author Jilly McMillan to talk about her domestic thriller, The Manor House. The Manor House is a terrifying tale where dreams turn into nightmares. In the novel, we meet childhood sweethearts, Nicole and Tom, and we see how their lives are transformed overnight after winning the lottery. But when Tom is found dead, Nicole's world crumbles, and she soon discovers that with big money comes bigger problems and even threats, which leaves Nicole feeling like a little fish in a big glass bowl, surrounded by piranhas. So in this episode, Jilly and I talk about The Manor House, her previous books, and we had so much fun playing the game, so Jilly won the lottery. But before we get into the episode, please leave the podcast a 5-star rating, write me a review if you love the show, and share this episode or any of your favorite episodes with your bookish friends. It really helps the show, it doesn't cost you a penny, and it keeps me and the show going. So thanks in advance, and now on to the episode with author Jilly McMillan. Hi readers, welcome again to the Reader's Couch. I'm your host, Victoria Wood, and here on the couch with me is the Sunday Times and New York Times best-selling author of numerous books that have been translated into over 20 languages, some of which include The Nanny, What She Knew, The Perfect Girl, and The Long Weekend. But she's here on the couch with me to talk about her latest, The Manor House. Please welcome to the couch, Jilly McMillan. Hi, Jilly.
Hi, Victoria. Thanks for having me.
Yay. I'm so excited to have you on the show. Can't wait to chat about The Manor House. But before we get into things, and I know this isn't your first rodeo, but it's your latest book. How are you feeling? How excited are you about this one?
I am super excited about this one. This was a tough one for me to write, and it went through a few different versions. So to have it out here on the shelves for people to read and respond to, it's a big deal for me on this book.
Ooh, I love hearing that. It's really exciting, I'm sure. But I want them to hear it straight from you before we kind of start to break things apart a bit here. Tell us about your book, The Manor House. What's your elevator pitch, and what can readers expect when they pick up a copy?
Readers can expect tons of twists and turns in this one. The Manor House is the story of Tom and Nicole. They're a normal, everyday young couple. They're childhood sweethearts. And one day they win the lottery. They win £10 million, which is nearly $20 million, US dollars, I think. And they do what many of us would do. They have a real estate upgrade. But their good fortune doesn't last long. The book opens with Nicole coming home, and it's not long before she finds Tom is dead in their swimming pool. That's not a spoiler. It happens about 5 pages in. And the story kicks off from there. It's was Tom murdered? Wasn't he? If he was, who done it and why? And they also have some close neighbors who live in the manor house, which is where the title of the book comes from.
Yes, yes. Like a traditional manor house, there, you know, different properties, carriage house, smaller house, so on. So let's get into those characters, because I think it's, you know, it's pretty basic. Young couple wins the lottery, things just, you know, don't unfold the way they had initially planned and hoped for. But there are other folks involved. There's Ollie, who's a novelist, and Sasha, a yoga instructor. Tell us about these two.
Ollie and Sasha are interesting. They live in the manor house, as we've said. They have a housekeeper called Kitty, who also lives there and works for them and does rather a lot for them. Sasha's a kind of influencer type. She has a yoga business that she's trying to build, and she loves to make use of this amazing location they have in the manor house. She does a lot of Instagram posting and that kind of thing. And Ollie is a wannabe novelist. He loves to write. He loves to write in the best room in the house. He loves to have people to be deferential to him, but he hasn't quite written a book that's got published yet. But he does believe in his own greatness. So he's a real interesting one.
Yes, absolutely. I found him very fascinating indeed. Now, like you said, it's not a spoiler to say Tom is killed. We're trying to figure, okay, who did this when he's found dead in the swimming pool. But then his friend comes along, his oldest friend, Patrick, after Tom passes away, to just, I guess you'd say, be there for Nicole, kind of should be, I should say. When a friend comes by, they should be more there to offer comfort and so on. But I think Patrick's there for reasons we're also trying to figure out as a reader. Tell us about Patrick.
Yeah, Patrick's an interesting one. I enjoyed writing Patrick. He turns up really soon after Tom's death. And what I should have said is that Tom and Nicole live in a really extraordinary building. It's called the Glass Barn, and it's a smart home. And I did a ton of interesting research into smart homes, including Bill Gates's, as I was writing this book. So Patrick swans in, and he's there to help Nicole. She doesn't really have mastery of this house. And while he's not necessarily that close to her emotionally to help her through her grief, he offers to be awfully helpful with everything else. And I think as the reader, I hope you won't be able to help yourself wondering what Patrick's motives really are.
Yes, I think that's what I was thinking most when I was reading, is why is Patrick really here? What is your purpose, sir? Because again, if a friend were to come round, it would be primarily to offer comfort. So we are questioning Patrick's motives indeed. But also there's a lead detective in charge of investigating Tom's death. Tell us about him.
So the detectives, there are a pair of them, but the lead one is a guy called Hal, and he's not a great political mover at work. You know, you kind of need to be as a detective. I think it helps you to get ahead. So his cases really matter to him. He has to perform well. So he gets quite invested in this, but it's a difficult case. If somebody dies outside in their property, you're not just looking at the people locally. You're wondering if somebody could have come onto the property. Anyone could be a suspect. So Hal has his work cut out for him on this.
Yes, he does indeed. You kind of briefly mentioned the smart house, the modern house, because the house itself is very much a character in this story. You also shared that Bill Gates' house you looked into as well. Tell me about the inspiration for the smart house in particular.
It really was Bill Gates' house. I went down the most sort of deep and complicated rabbit warren on the internet looking into all this stuff. It was great fun. Bill Gates' stuff, a house, if you want to look that up for yourselves, it's full of incredible smart features, as you might imagine. Every room is temperature controlled. The house knows who's in it and where they are. If you play music in the house, it follows you around from room to room at the volume that you like it to be at, and all sorts of other security features. So I spent a lot of time reading about that and thinking about how to incorporate it into my story. And also I thought a lot about ways it could go wrong.
Yes, because technology can go wrong. From time to time. I mean, even, sometimes just recording a simple podcast and we can have hiccups, but Jilly and I are pretty good here today. But tell me about the lottery bit of it, because I think that is something we daydream about just as everyday people at least once. I want to feel everyone has daydreamed at least once what it would be like if they won the lottery. What would they do? What would they buy? Tell me about that element in the novel, and where did that inspiration come from?
Firstly, I was thinking about writing a novel about pyramid schemes, not sort of big Bernie Madoff style, but the local ones that can infiltrate local communities and really tear apart friendships and relationships and neighborhoods. But that was hard to make work in a novel. So it was actually my agent who said, what about a lotto win? Because I think money changes people. And it obviously is often a motive in crime stories. And I really wanted to look at that in quite a bold sort of way. So I went with the lottery idea. And it was really interesting because I wanted to explore how it changes relationships, how it changes how we feel about people, what people's expectations are about one another when money comes into the equation, and what it's like to have such an immediate change in your circumstances. And I was speaking about this at a book event recently, and when I was doing a signing afterwards, a woman waited right to the end, and she came up to me and she whispered to me, "I won the lottery." And then she said, "And my friends don't think it's changed me." And I thought that was such an interesting thing to say.
That is interesting. I mean, I've never met anyone who's won the lottery. I've known by extension, someone's in your town and your family's like, "Oh, so-and-so won," but you don't really know them directly. So I can't really say, but I think that would be rare, don't you think, that someone has won, it hasn't changed them, and their friends, they still have their friends intact.
I think it's rare. And it was another thing I researched, and there are so many people who seem to have blown all their money, all their family relationships. I mean, these are the people who make stories in the press. So perhaps there are a bunch of really well-adjusted lottery winners out there. But I do think it would change you, even if it gave you, just to give you the sort of insecurities that Nicole has in the book about how to be rich. She's worried about how to be rich, how not to be judged by other rich people, that kind of thing.
Yes, yes. It's quite interesting. I think it's also complicated. And at the same time, there could be several different outcomes. But I think the one I struggle with is whether or not a person would change. And if they feel they haven't changed, how do the people around them who knew them before perceive them? Because I think, you know, it's difficult not to, especially if someone has run into money quite quickly and everyone else is struggling, if that makes sense.
I agree. And I think people's expectations of you might change. I was doing an interview yesterday and the person interviewing me was saying, well, you know, would they expect something different if you turned up for Christmas lunch? Are you supposed to bring expensive presents or do you bring the same presents you bought before? And, you know, just all those little social things, like, would people expect different of you or not? Maybe they wouldn't.
Maybe they wouldn't. Maybe they would. I think it's all dependent on the individual. But I think this is a good segue into a game I want to play, which is entitled So Jilly Won the Lottery. So we can see what Jilly would actually do if she won the lottery. And this goes without saying, this was inspired by the fact that the main characters in this book, Nicole and Tom, won the lottery. And I'm just really curious, what would our author do if she won? So I'm going to list some rapid fire prompts and you're going to tell me what you would do or wouldn't do, because obviously Jilly won the lottery. Are you ready?
I'm ready.
Yay. Okay. So what is the first thing you would do if you found out you won the lottery?
Buy a new house.
Ooh, buy a new house. Would you take the lump sum or do the annuity?
Lump sum.
Lump sum. You said the first thing you'd buy is a house. What would the second thing be?
A dog.
Dog. Okay. How soon would you quit your job or would you stay employed?
I would stay writing. I love writing.
Who's the first professional you would hire?
Oh, a personal trainer.
Personal trainer. What other professionals would you hire?
Oh, probably a landscaper for my big new garden. Mm-hmm. But not too many people. I like my privacy.
Yes, same here. Would you go on vacation or would you buy a vacation home? But where would you go? You know, what would you be doing? Give us the details.
I would do both. I would go on a big tour of Europe's capitals, all the beautiful luxury hotels, and see all the things I've dreamed of seeing. But I'd also buy a vacation home somewhere beautiful and secluded, maybe somewhere in France or Italy.
Yeah, I like that. What luxury item would be top on your list?
Oh, because I feel old these days, a really comfortable mattress.
Yes.
So boring.
Listen, that is such an underrated thing, but I would pay anything for a good mattress, but also pillows, because I find myself going through pillows like nobody's business.
Yes, yes, yes.
So if I could get something custom, I would do that. What would you do for your family and friends?
I would try to make my children and my mother secure, you know? I think mm-hmm. give them some security, help them with property. Friends, I don't know. I think you'd have to be careful with that one. If someone was in need, I'd try to help them. But it's another question, isn't it? Where do you start and where do you stop?
Yes, yes, for sure. What charities would you support?
I would support charities for children in need, children in poverty, children with illness, children whose families needed support, and animal shelters. I love animals.
Oh, I love that. And last one, what else would you do that I didn't think of asking you today?
I think I would hire, I need to add someone to my staff list. I need an assistant, a research assistant for my books.
Yeah, I think that would be helpful because then you can write more books.
Yes.
And we can have more things to read. Jilly, thank you so much for playing the game.
You're welcome. Thank you for the game. It was fun.
Oh, I love it. I love it. So In addition to The Manor House, right, you've written several other books. We have What She Knew, The Perfect Girl, Odd Child Out, I Know You, The Nanny, which I don't know. I mean, I'd love to hear from you. I think The Nanny is the one that is most synonymous with your name, but there's also To Tell You the Truth, The Long Weekend, and we're here with The Manor House. How would you say your books are similar or different? But also, what was the book that made you feel like, okay, I've made it?
I was lucky enough that my debut, which was What She Knew, was the book that really launched my career and made me feel, turned me into a writer, actually. What She Knew turned me into a writer, absolutely. It was a very successful book. I was very lucky with it. And I think that since then, I've been just trying to kind of, What She Knew and Odd Child Out are detective stories, so they're more in the crime genre. And then I've also written a bunch of psychological thrillers, of which The Nanny is probably my favorite and the one that's closest as a read to The Manor House.
Yes, I think it's closest for sure. But how are your books similar or different, would you say, outside of the two detective stories? Because I agree, you have those two and then the rest are standalone psychological thrillers. How are the psychological thrillers similar or different? Do you find yourself going back to one thread?
I think I like to look at the fact that people are never straightforward. They are never black and white. So whenever I write a character, I'm looking for all the sides of their personality and how I can play with that in the plot. And that's something I enjoy when I read, how characters turn out to be not quite who we thought they were in all sorts of different ways.
Right, right. And how do you keep readers guessing as a mystery and thriller writer? What's that one element that you try to always include, but also keep us guessing?
I don't plot my books, so I often don't know who done it when I start writing. And I think that's one way that I keep the suspense going for the reader, because I'm keeping it going for myself as well. And I think that's something I've tried to do with all the books. It can be a problem. It gives you difficulties as you're writing sometimes and leads to a lot of editing, but it does keep things fresh for you and hopefully for the reader too.
Are you working on any other projects now? I mean, as readers, we tend to be a bit greedy, especially with thrillers and mysteries. We just eat them up and spit them out. So are you working on anything else?
I've had a slow year because I'm trying to write a slightly different thriller. So I've slowed myself down a bit from my usual book a year pace. So I hope readers will be patient with me, and I hope to have more news about that soon.
Ooh, now I'm excited. Is it still going to be a thriller? What's the different element? What are you trying to do different? Is it like a different genre kind of, or a detective novel? What are you leaning towards?
It's a thriller, absolutely, because I love to read thrillers more than anything else. I'm leaning away from a domestic thriller into more kind of maybe slightly dark academia-y type area.
Ooh, okay. I'm definitely interested. This is going to be fascinating. Okay. I can tell you can't tell too much right now. You're probably still fleshing it out. But if you could look back, because rightfully so, your first book, your debut, What She Knew, really catapulted you. And I think everyone knows The Nanny, The Long Weekend, and many others. If you could tell your younger writing self anything, looking back, what would you tell her?
I would tell her three words, and I say this to all debut writers or people who want to be published as well, and those words are hold your nerve, because writing, like getting started in a lot of careers, is tough, and you have to make a lot of decisions and you have to stand by them. So hold your nerve.
Hold your nerve. Easy to remember. I like those three words. Getting into your reading life too, because we love knowing what our authors are reading, but I want to go all the way back. You love thrillers, you love the mystery. What was that first mystery or thriller that you read that really captivated you as either a child or a young adult?
Well, I used to read all the famous five adventures. So I think I got a taste for, you know, kind of mystery stories when I was very young. But the books I really, really loved were ones that packed more of an emotional punch. So I loved Black Beauty and I loved White Fang by Jack London. And then when I was a teenager, the book I really loved was The Outsiders by S.E. Hinton. And I think all those books made me cry.
I love a good emotional read. And, you know, it's interesting you should say that because my pitch for this book is that it's a good mystery, but you really give us a good psychological drama as well. So we're trying to figure, obviously, who killed Tom and why, but we do get drama in it as well, which can stir up emotions. So, okay, I can kind of see that. That's very interesting to know. But what was the last book that you finished reading now that you would now recommend?
The book I finished last that I loved the most is a book called Ghost Wall by Sarah Moss. It's a short book and it's really, really dark and it's absolutely brilliant. I highly recommend it.
I absolutely love Sarah Moss. Anything she writes, I will read. And you're right. It's such a tiny book, but it really packs a punch. And I'm struggling to think of a book that she's written that I haven't recommended. She's a go-to author for me, for sure.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. I love everything she's written.
So good. Outside of mysteries and thrillers, and you just recommended Sarah Moss, and she's neither. What are your go-to genres?
I read really widely. I probably the genre I read least is romance, but I love a good post-apocalyptic story. I quite like fantasy. So I really go to anything that keeps me turning the pages.
What books are you looking forward to reading in the year ahead?
Oh, so I always look forward to new releases by Mary Kubica, the thriller writer, and she's got one coming out called She's Not Sorry. Also Heather Gudenkauf, who's got one coming out called Everyone Is Watching. So I will be buying those books. I love their books. And there's one on my shelf. It's actually already out. James McBride's Heaven and Earth Grocery Store. That's on my to-be-read list, and I cannot wait.
I love that. So in addition to loving books and reading, sometimes readers fall into a bit of a slump. We have our reader problems too. Either there's someone listening who's struggling to find the time to read. But like I said, they're reading, all's going good, but then nothing seems to be catching their attention. They fall into a slump and nothing seems to be working for them. So share with our listeners what has worked for you when, one, you're in a slump and you're trying to get out, but also how do you find more time to read?
Ooh, I'm going to say I've never been in a reading slump. And I think that's because I have so many books on my bedside table that if I don't like one, there's always another there that I can enjoy. I think I read obsessively. And in terms of helping someone find time to read, if you know the answer to that, I would love to hear it. We all need extra hours in the day for that.
I for sure struggle with finding more time to do all the things. I often recommend for some, well, you're a voracious reader, but I often recommend for someone who hasn't read in a really long time to prioritize reading. Put it on their calendar. Think of it as a doctor's appointment you don't want to miss, because you know if you miss the appointment, you're going to have to wait a while to get back in. So find that time. Yeah, find that time that works for you. If it's in the morning, in my case, early mornings are when I have my alone time. So that's when I'll read or journal or just do the things I can't do when everyone's pulling at my attention, pulling for my attention rather, but also late at night. So that's something I do. Always have a book because I'm always waiting. I'm either in a carpool line, again, doctor's office, just waiting on someone, or I arrived early. I'll try to always have a book on hand to read, kind of like you do with the nightstand. So
yeah, absolutely. And sometimes I read when I'm having my lunch or yeah, anywhere I can fit it in, really.
Yes, and audiobooks seem to be working for a lot of listeners. They listen when they're doing chores, when they're commuting. So yeah, whatever works. Once you're able to just squeeze some reading in, I'm happy, but it's also good for you too. So some good you time. But in addition to books and authors, we love all indie bookstores on the show. So share with our listeners your favorite, either local to you or an indie you discovered on your travels.
So I really love an indie bookstore here in Bristol in the UK called Max Minerva's. And they're just a small store, but they have a terrific selection of books and they really know their community. And I think that's the key to indie stores. They really know who their readers are. They know who they're serving. And it's that personal connection and recommendations that I think are just brilliant.
Yes, they absolutely help to set them apart and they give you the book sometimes you didn't even know you needed. So for sure, we love our indie bookstores. But getting back to your book, The Manor House, and kind of, you know, wrapping things together. Again, I know you've done your job. You've written this one. But what are you hoping readers might think or feel after they've read The Manor House?
I think they might. Well, I'm going to bring this back to the tagline on the cover of the book, which says, "Be careful what you wish for." So I think if you've been fantasizing about winning the lottery, you might want to think twice about that after reading the book.
Yes, it might give you second thoughts about, well, you know, maybe life's not so bad as it is right now. But listeners, if you're looking for a good mystery, but if you're looking for that psychological drama that's also clever and filled with a surprising twist, I hope you'll give The Manor House a go. Jilly, thank you so much for coming on the show and speaking with me. It's been an absolute pleasure.
Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you so much for listening to the Reader's Couch podcast. Please subscribe to the show, share it with a friend, and take a few seconds to leave a rating and review. Until next time, stay lounging, stay reading, and whenever you're in doubt, go straight to your local bookstore or library. Thanks again for listening, and happy reading.